everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. Tom, at this hour, Hurricane Genevieve, a Category 1, Cat 1, minimal hurricane. You got to be around 70 mile per hour to get into that category. Just making that designation, just hammering, though, the Mexican resort community of Cabo San Lucas, dumping much needed rain on the Baja del Sur, the southern part of the Baja Peninsula. Boy, I sure hope we can get what's left of the hurricane. Well, actually, the hurricane's still roaring. It's not going to be dissipating, but it will be making a turn to the northwest, away from the Baja. But maybe it will be enough to get some triggering, some thunderstorm activity. But I just looked at the rain chances, Tom. 10 to 20%. Not great.
Well, we're hoping maybe later this afternoon and evening, and it might continue through the weekend, so I've got my fingers crossed.
Yeah, so do I. We desperately need it on the driest and the hottest summer ever in Tucson, Arizona. When I say ever, well, at least since records have been kept. A couple of significant things today. Today's Tucson's birthday. We'll talk about that in a few moments. It's National Radio Day. And Nandy, the baby elephant, is 6 years old today over at the Reed Park Zoo. And the Reed Park Zoo made an important announcement. They will be reopening to the public later this month. That is really good news. We welcome that. Something that's not so great news, El Tour announcing just a few moments ago, El Tour to Tucson, it will be postponed in 2020. They have moved El Tour now to April 2021. So that is next April. The Buckmaster Show on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. We are bringing Southern Arizonans together in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Today is the 245th anniversary of the founding of the Tucson Presidio by the government of Spain. People have been living, of course, in along the Santa Cruz for thousands of years, but this kind of marks the European founding of the Presidio of Tucson. We're joined now on the live line by Damian Klinko, CEO of the nonprofit Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation, which spearheaded a six-year effort to get the National Park Service just this past May to officially add a stretch of East Broadway, known as the Sunshine Mile, to the National Register of Historic Places. Damian's a former Arizona State Representative, and he was elected in 2016 to the governing board of Pima Community College, where he serves as chairman. Damian, how are you?
I'm excellent, Bill. Thank you so much for having me on today, and happy birthday to Tucson.
Yeah, happy birthday. There'll be, of course, because of COVID, no live face-to-face events. But, you know, this is an appropriate day to have you on the program. I've been wanting to take kind of a deep dive into historic preservation on the show for a while. Why don't we start off, Damian, with giving, why don't you give a grade, a report card grade? Overall, how do we do in the area of historic preservation and in Tucson?
You know, Bill, I think that we probably have a solid B at this point. You know, we've suffered some significant losses, and we've lost some irreplaceable architectural landmarks that really represented the iconic sort of quintessential qualities that make Tucson architecture unique. But with that said, we've also, I think, made headway in the public space in really changing perceptions and perspectives on the value of historic preservation within the community. And I think we're seeing a shift from our elected leadership that really preservation is part of a continuum and part of a holistic approach to strong community development.
We really had to kind of build back interest and enthusiasm in historic preservation in the mid-60s. so much of the old Pueblo, the old part of Tucson and downtown, really was in the way of urban renewal, Damien, and it's been kind of a tough road back. There have been some wins and some losses, but I think one of the big wins just happened in May. Why don't you tell our listeners the significance of the Sunshine Mile designation?
Yes. So as we've talked about on this show in the past, the Sunshine Mile, which is really a 2-mile stretch from Euclid to Country Club, was the premier suburban shopping district after World War II in Tucson. And along this corridor, all of these really interesting stores that had very expressive architecture designed by some of the best architects working in Tucson during the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, populated the street. And so it really became a epicenter and magnet for a shopping destination. What we saw in the 1980s was a push towards widened east-west arterial streets. And as a result of that, there was decades of economic disinvestment along the corridor with the anticipation of a future transportation project. Well, that project came in the form of the RTA, and initially it was conceived as an 8-lane increase to the street, which after significant community involvement and participation was reduced to 6. And that left an opportunity with dozens and dozens of buildings not being demolished on the north side of the street, which was part of the original plan. It left an opportunity for those properties to be repositioned and preserved. So you sort of had preservation by neglect. So because of the promise of a future transportation corridor and a large widening, people didn't make significant changes to their commercial storefronts. And so you sort of retained this dynamic mid-century architecture. What we saw after the sort of the final lines of the future roadway were defined, Rio Nuevo, led by Fletcher McCusker, engaged actively because Broadway and this part of the Sunshine Mile is within the tax increment finance district of Rio Nuevo. So Rio Nuevo draws from the sales tax along that corridor into its coffers, which is then able to strategically invest into projects which have shown a return to the community. So the Rio Nuevo board actively engaged in this sort of renewed process and have taken a strong leadership role in identifying properties along the corridor. And they're doing 3 sort of specific areas, the Sola Plaza, the Friedman Block, and the Bungalow Block, where they're going to produce demonstration projects and really create opportunities for real thoughtful reinvestment and bringing back local businesses and restaurants that I think will align nicely with sort of the post-COVID era. The Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation worked for numerous years to list this corridor on the National Register, and that listing creates economic opportunities. If you own a historic commercial building along that corridor, you are eligible for 20% federal income tax credits on the total cost of the rehabilitation. So if you're putting $1 million into your building, you're looking at getting $200,000 back in a federal tax credit, which you can leverage into a variety of different financing options to help move your project. So our effort to list this on the National Register was, one, to acknowledge and recognize the architectural and cultural importance of this corridor and the development of our city, but also to create a very important economic tool to help promote and support local businesses and property owners as they reinvest in the coming years.
And we're talking about really dozens of structures. I think you had pointed out in an Arizona Daily Star article, Damien Klinko, that roughly 80% of more than 200 structures do have contributing historic value.
Yes, so there are dozens and dozens of buildings up and down the corridor have been designated through a very thoughtful and iterative process, have been designated as contributors to the district. And so these are buildings that retain enough character to convey their original historic significance. And it's through that historic significance that that there really is a value return to the community. So we have a comprehensive list to be able to say this property, you know, qualifies, and this property, you know, maybe it's had too many modifications, but it could be returned. Or this property, you know, was built in 1990 and it doesn't qualify for these credits. But there's a very, very strong historic fabric left. And when you drive down that corridor, Today, the street is completely torn up. But as this project concludes, and certainly before it, you really have a sense that you're in a unique and special part of our city. Yeah. And that's the opportunity, is to really celebrate that mid-century modern heritage and theme, and really create a new district in our community that people will go to enjoy.
You know, I'm thinking about the timing, and you mentioned the post-COVID era, which hopefully will begin next year. The timing on this actually is pretty good, Damian Klinko. You've got a $71 million road project underway currently with the medians, the bike lanes, the bus pullouts, the sidewalks from Euclid to Country Club, and this will go on through up to about September of 2021. By then, I think we're going to be in the recovery period. And if you're going to do the work, maybe it's best to do it right now when it's really at a down time.
Yeah, I think, you know, as we look across sort of the community and we sort of envision what a recovery will look like, this area is really poised to see a comeback. It's, you know, these are one of the things that's really wonderful about the street historically and today is many of the storefronts are very small in terms of street frontage because it was what small businesses could afford. So, you know, but it faces a major arterial street, and these really can serve as incredible incubator spaces for small businesses. And as we see this recovery, there are such an enormous amount of economic development tools that have been lined up over the last few years, and with Rio Nuevo's participation, and they're actively working on creating an overlay that will allow for an infusion of new development while celebrating and restoring the historic character, and that's in progress currently. That, coupled with the historic tax credits and other types of incentives that exist in our community, this area is poised for seeing a significant resurgence in the post-COVID era.
All right, we're going to pause right here. Damian Klinko will stick around, CEO of the nonprofit Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, the Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Damian Klinko remains on the live line, and we'll be back with him after we take our first break on this Thursday afternoon.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is in the process of developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, and soon will consider which projects best address transportation needs across the greater Tucson region. As part of its ongoing public outreach, the RTA invites your early input on which projects meet regional goals. Learn more about plan development and provide input at rtanext.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Damian Klinko is with us on the live line, CEO of the nonprofit Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation. We spent our first segment talking about the Sunshine Mile over on Broadway, but there are other items on the agenda for the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation. Damian, we have talked a lot on this program about the University of Arizona looking at really all assets around the table, including the what's known as the farm over on Campbell, the University of Arizona Agriculture Center. We had Jeff Silvertooth on the program from the University of Arizona College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Jeff told us, and Jeff's been around a long time, that this isn't the first time that the farm has been looked at as possibly being an item that could be sold off. We had Larry Penley last Friday, the chair of the Arizona Board of Regents, and he confirmed that all assets are on the table. I really hope the U of A will not sell off the farm, Damian Klinko.
Yes, so thank you, Bill. We at the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation can't agree more. The University of Arizona Farms, which is a 140-acre property, it's two parcels that flank either side of Campbell Boulevard as you head north into the Catalina foothills, right before you get to the Rito River. The farm dates back to 1909 when the Board of Regents took action to purchase it. And it had originally been Mexican-American homesteads. And there were two Mexican-American homesteads that date back to the 1880s with the accompanying surface water and agricultural production. And they purchased the west side of Campbell initially and started to put investment into the land, both for agricultural, educational purposes. As an arid desert environment, there really was a need before statehood to make critical investments into better understanding how the agricultural lands of Arizona could be harvested and cultivated in a sustainable and a productive way. And this experimental station became a key element of that story. The University of Arizona hired renowned architects to build the buildings that today still litter the property. They include buildings by Henry Josted, who was the mayor of Tucson, and his colleague, Annie Graham Rockefeller, who was one of the first female architects working in the state of Arizona. Lyman of Lyman and Place Architects, who designed most of the buildings and we sort of think of as the historic core of the campus. Off of University, also contributed buildings to the farm. On the east side, the property through the early part of the 20th century continued as a dairy farm, and then was ultimately acquired by the university. But collectively, this historic landscape is just really one of the most extraordinary publicly owned open spaces in our urban core. It's almost you drive by something every single day, and you sort of forget that it's there. But when you stop and you get out of your car and you look at the magnificence of this landscape and how it has managed to sustain and thrive as part of this our agricultural tradition of our state is incredible. And I mean, it not only is it magnificently beautiful, but the importance to the development of agriculture in our community cannot be understated. And when you think about Tucson and our designation as UNESCO City of Gastronomy, it's that nomination was tied to that continuum of traditional knowledge and arid farming in the Tucson Basin. And it is not a far leap to draw a clear connection between that ancient agricultural traditions to modern agricultural traditions of the turn of the 19th century, which are expressed and exemplified in the U of A farms. It really is one of the premier properties, and I think selling that property for development would be akin to selling off Tumamoc Hill for condo development. These properties are part of what makes Tucson unique. It's part of what makes our state special, and it's what's part of adds dynamic fabric and texture to our lives. And to see something as special and as unique as that sold off for redevelopment would be a generational disappointment. People would look back in 20, 30, 40, 50, and 100 years and say, how was that allowed to happen on their watch? And so I think we as a community have a responsibility to stand up and say, you know, yes, you need to evaluate and look what's on the table, because the U of A as an entity needs to survive. But we shouldn't be compromising and selling off some of our greatest publicly owned assets, for a short-term fix.
Yeah, we have to really watch this. I'm very much on board with saying please no to the to selling off any part of the UA farm. So we've been huge advocates and trying to be a big voice for urging people to contact the University of Arizona and the president's office. Do not sell the farm. That's where I'm on this one, Damien.
Yeah, do not sell the farm.
No.
I mean, it is really in the, when you look across our city at historic resources, it's really in the top tier of just some of the most premier places. And if your listeners haven't stopped as they've, you know, driven up and down Campbell, they should just pull over and just take a little walk around and look at the beauty of not only an outstanding collection of Mission Revival agricultural buildings, but just the magnificence of the actual landscape and the farm itself. It really is just a premier asset that we all own.
Damien, I'm quickly running out of time, and I do want
yes.
to carve a minute or two out to talk about Proposition 481. Why don't we do that right now, very quickly? Being the chair of the Pima Community College Governing Board, tell me a little bit about we talked a little bit on the show a couple of weeks ago about it, but what would Prop 481 on the ballot in Pima County do to help Pima Community College?
Yeah, so Pima Community College is subject to an expenditure limit, which means that per Arizona law, we are limited on how much we can spend per student of the tax dollars that we bring in. So if we have a decline in enrollment, we can spend less of the dollars that are coming into the college from the tax base. This was the calculation was set up almost 40 years ago, and that particularly year, Pima Community College had a very conservative budget, and so we are, as a college, are able to spend less than every other community college in the state of Arizona. So this just simply resets that calculation to put us at a level playing field with the other community colleges in the state. We will just simply be at the state average, but it allows us to spend the money that we're already bringing in. And when we think about COVID and the impacts that COVID are going to have, not only on our college today and tomorrow, but the importance of Pima College in the coming years as part of the recovery, Pima Community College is the premier jobs program to help re-educate, retool, reskill the entire workforce and population of our community. It's there. It belongs to us, the taxpayers and members of Pima County. And it is there to at service to all of us. But in order to sustain and to really be part of that recovery, this needs to pass so that the college has the resources to really robustly approach the recovery and have the resources to stand up new programs in this post-COVID environment. So it's really critical to support Pima Community College, support workforce development, support our economic recovery, that we say yes to Proposition 481. It does not raise taxes. It simply resets an old antiquated algorithm that lets us spend more of the money we already have.
It really is a win-win for everyone. And you just said the very important word. People, you know, they hear these things, they'll think, oh my gosh, taxes, this is going to cost more. It will not increase taxes.
Correct. It does not increase taxes. It just lets us spend the money that we already have. And to be able to strategically spend it. You know, this board is very concerned about and it has, I think, demonstrated very, very strong financial responsibility in managing the limited dollars that we've had. And we've been able to use our funds to really turn the college around over the last 6 to 7 years. And during that time, I think we've demonstrated just how important the college is to our community. Doesn't raise taxes, and will let us really propel and be part of that recovery to help serve everybody in Southern Arizona.
All right. People can find out more at pima.edu. I want to ask you about where people can become members and how they find out more about the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation.
Super easy. They can visit us at preservetucson.org. They can sign up for email updates. You can also follow us on Instagram or Facebook at Preserve Tucson or Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation.
Sounds good. Damian Klinka, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Bill. Always a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Damian Klinko, CEO of nonprofit Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation. Will Humble is next on the Buckmaster Show. We'll get a COVID update. I think much more encouraging than when we talked to Will a month ago. Things looking better. We'll be right back.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Beautiful 13-acre site, now home to Zocalo and all the great merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Come tour the five shops at Zocalo Village. Their website is greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We now go on the live line to Phoenix, Arizona, and Will Humble, who is the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. Will Humble was the Arizona Department of Health Agency Director from 2009 to 2015. And it's always a pleasure to welcome Will to the program. And Will, I've got a stack of stuff here that I want to tear through here. It's going to go very quickly. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for the invitation again. It's been about a month.
Yeah, it's been about a month. A month ago, things weren't looking good. Overall, things seem to be pretty good. The caseload here in Pima County, two straight days under 100 or less than 100 cases. Our infection rate, I understand, is now considered one of the lowest in the country. What is your overall take, Will?
Yeah, things are looking much better than they were a month ago. Here's what I attribute that to, is really three different things. Number one is the face covering ordinances that the local jurisdictions put in, the city of Phoenix, the boards of supervisors, the city of Tucson, really all the big jurisdictions put that face covering requirement on. And you see, you know, when you go out into the community now, it's a normalized behavior to wear a face covering. So that's made a big difference. The fact that the bars and nightclubs have now been closed for about 6 weeks, that has made a big difference. And quite honestly, now, I'll just be straight with you. We did such a bad job in June and in July that so many people got sick that we are benefiting now from some herd immunity. Now, we're not there yet, but there's been a big subsection of the state that's now been infected and recovered. And so I think that's working in our favor as well right now.
The inconsistency with daily reporting, would you like to address this between the state of Arizona and Johns Hopkins? A lot of people are wondering, how are the stats so different? They're confused about the positivity rate. Could you kind of give us the thumbnail sketch on that?
Yeah, I'll do my best, but it is kind of confusing. So here's how COVID Act Now and Johns Hopkins calculates the positivity rate, and it's simply the number of laboratory reports that come out daily from the laboratories like Sonora Quest, et cetera. And they take the numerator is the number of new cases. The denominator is the total number of tests conducted. And that's that day's daily positivity rate. So the state, actually, you can calculate that on the state website as well. A better way to do it is, quite honestly, the approach that the state health department is taking, which is you take those reports that come in from the laboratories and then you backdate them to the date that the sample was collected. So, for example, a test that came back from Sonora Quest today might have been taken, let's say, 6 days ago. So you would load that positive case into August 14th or 13th, something like that. And then you'd get a more accurate view of what the positivity rate was a few days ago. So I support
that approach what the state is using. But they're making a big mistake, and I'm doing some advocacy last week and this week to try to get them to change it, which is what's happening is most of the labs are turning in their data in an electronic format using a portal that the state health department has. That we started back when I was in that director job. We started this portal. Well, that's the data that they're using to calculate the positivity rate. But about a third of the data that's coming in from these labs is not in the electronic format that they can use readily. And so instead of inputting that data into the system, they're simply throwing it away. I mean, metaphorically, it still exists, but they're not using it. And so many important decisions are tied to the positivity rate, from in-person instruction in the K-12 system to the opening of gyms and bars and nightclubs, that I believe it's worth inputting the data from all of the labs so that we can get a positivity rate that all of us can believe in and trust. And all it would take is the state hiring 3 or 4 temps, you know, from Kelly Services or KCA, who are on state contract, to just input the data. But for some reason, they're unwilling to do that. So it's kind of frustrating. They have a good the approach they're taking in terms of the math is a good one, but they're just throwing away 30% of the data, which is kind of frustrating.
What do you suspect the positivity rate is? We keep hearing it needs to be below 5%.
So that depends on what part of the state that you're in. You in Pima County are actually you're in pretty good shape right now. Your positivity rate is probably close to 6-7%. I didn't check today. And we don't know what it is today. All you know is what the positivity rate was, let's say, a week ago, you know, because as I mentioned, you're backdating the samples to the date they were collected. So Pima County's in actually pretty good shape. Now, there are some counties that are in bad shape, like Yuma, where they have a much higher positivity rate. So there is a regional effect, which is a reason why I think it's good that these metrics for both in-person instruction and bars and nightclubs, et cetera, are tied to the county metrics rather than the statewide metrics, because we do see a pretty substantial difference depending on what part of the state you're in.
Will Humble is with us from the Arizona Public Health Association. Will, how can people follow you? I know you've been doing a blog about this positivity rate and some interesting stuff. What's a good way to follow you on Facebook or Twitter or whatever?
Yeah, I don't have Facebook, but okay. I have a blog, which is at the Arizona Public Health Association. It's called Public Health Today. So if you go into Google and put Arizona Public Health Association, Public Health Today blog, you'll get my blog. And I put up a new one every day. I'm doing a new series starting over the weekend on the immune system, the human immune system. There's a lot of discussion about antibodies and, you know, does infection with COVID-19 give you lasting immunity? So I'm gonna cover all those things and try to put it in a consumable way so that you don't need to be have a scientific background to understand it. So that's what I try to do, is to put a lot of these issues into a context where, you know, somebody who doesn't work in any part of public health can get it.
All right. I think I'll take the break right here because I want to talk about herd immunity. There's some very positive news, interviews with the New York Times, more than a dozen scientists now saying the threshold for herd immunity is much lower than what was previously thought. It now is believed to be just about 50%. This is really important stuff. We're going to come back with Will Humble. If you'd like to join us on the live line, 790-2040. Be right back.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery in Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for the draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion of the program presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Time to start planning to visit Silver City. So when you're ready, New Mexico will probably be ready, I hope very soon, to once again welcome out-of-state visitors. Only a three-hour drive east of Tucson, Southwest New Mexico, spelled out .org. The place to go for things to do and great places to stay. The Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go back on the Live Line to Will Humble, the director, executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association and former director of the Arizona Department of Health. Will, there's all sorts of news about herd immunity that is coming out, so much so in the New York Times that they're saying there are pockets now of New York City and London and Delhi, India, where there is substantial immunity.
Yeah, I've seen that too. And actually, that's based on some analyses by some pretty well-recognized academics. So that's a pretty credible source. I always like to go back to the source, and see where they got that information. And I saw the list, and it's a pretty impressive list of academics. So it sounds right to me. And by the way, we had such a terrible June and early July that, Arizona's benefiting from some herd immunity now. I mean, as you approach, it sounds like as you approach 50%, you begin to get close to that herd immunity threshold. But even if you're a state like ours and you've got, let's imagine for a moment we're at 15 or 20%. We don't know exactly what that figure is, but even if it's at that level, you are benefiting from that because it makes it more challenging for the virus to find a new host when we have so many people that have been infected with the virus and then since recovered. Because you remember what this was like in June and July. It was off the charts bad.
Yeah, and there was initially perhaps 70% was thought of a given population must be immune. That's being lowered to about 50%, so that's very good news. There's a recent batch of studies that are showing that humans have a robust immune response to COVID-19 that may protect them from further infection. This sets the table, I think, and let's see if you agree with me, in a nice way for these vaccines which will be coming on board.
No, I agree totally with you. The phase two trial. So the way that works is initially when you're developing a vaccine, you do a phase one trial, and that's just a real limited trial to just make sure that it's safe. And then you do a phase two trial, which is usually a couple hundred people. And there you're looking to see both, is it safe and is it effective? Does it mount an immune response? And there are about 18 different vaccines that have gone through the phase two trials. And basically, for like in AstraZeneca and in the Moderna vaccines, every single participant had a robust immune response. And so those have now progressed to phase three, which is the final phase. And there's actually trials, the Moderna and the AstraZeneca phase three trials are happening here in Arizona. So if you go to my blog, you can find the place that you can look in and volunteer for that. It's a website through the NIH. But yeah, exactly. Very promising, I think. And welcome news, I think, for everybody. We've all been through a lot.
Yeah, we have. And many people haven't been out of their home, have not interacted with any human being since March. There's an interesting article, an op-ed in the New York Times by Elizabeth Rosenthal, the editor-in-chief of Kaiser Health News. Elizabeth is author of An American Sickness, How Healthcare Became Big Business and How You Can Take It Back. Her message is, Will Humble, that we are living in a world with some level of coronavirus is out there now and is going to be with us, that at some point people are going to have to start realizing they're going to have to look and evaluate their own risk tolerance.
Well, that's been happening since the very beginning of the pandemic, I think. I think it's too early to say that this virus is going to be with us forever. I think that's a possibility. And there are lots of gloom and doomers out there. I'm not one of them. I'm a wait and see person. And to me, we know that there's lasting immunity, both B cells and T cells and antibodies. So that's good news. The phase three trials for the vaccine are going well. I think this might very well become, in the category of things like mumps or something, where there's sporadic cases that come from time to time. But if people participate in the vaccine and we get enough people taking the vaccine, I'm not so sure this is going to be something that we'll be talking about 2 years from now. It will be on to other subjects.
I hope so. Jeff has called us with a question for Will Humble. Jeff, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I want to be careful how I phrase this. I hear stopping the COVID virus framed in a couple of specific areas. One, you either get the virus and then you develop, you don't get sick, or you do get sick, whichever, or you get mildly sick, but then you develop your immunity to it and it goes away from you and goes on its way. But my question is, isn't it possible or even realistic that a certain percentage of people, let's just say a 40%, just to pick a number, for some reason, whatever it might be, are simply immune to COVID virus from the get-go? In other words, you could put them on a plane full of people with COVID virus, and they simply wouldn't get it because they have something. I don't understand why, if this virus were truly as vicious as it's sort of portrayed, that there wouldn't be way, way, way more infections already. There All must right. be something that stops this thing apart from a so-called vaccine from the NIH or whatever.
Jeff is on to something here, Will, and there have been stories, and it's being studied right now, about there may be a genetic, some kind of, that goes back thousands and thousands of years in the makeup of certain individuals that might indeed make them less likely to get this.
Well, I mean, that's certainly a possibility. But you're definitely onto something in two different ways. Number one, there could be something to that effect. I think there's several things going on. Number one, the initial dose that you get seems to matter. In other words, if you your initial viral load, if the initial amount that you're exposed to from somebody is low, your body has a easier time developing antibodies in time before you get seriously ill. So the viral load is one factor. We know age and pre-existing conditions is another factor in terms of how sick you get. We know that people in their 20s and 30s, and especially kids under 18, are highly unlikely to have a bad outcome. They might get sick, but it's nothing like being my age and up, where you have a much higher risk of having a bad outcome. There could be some people that are genetically, there's something about their DNA that allows them to fight this virus off more quickly. That's possible. I haven't seen any data to support that, but there is new data from the last 2 weeks that shows that there is some cross reactivity with other coronaviruses. And so, which is a theory why kids under 10 years old are so unlikely to have bad symptoms when they're infected with this virus. What I'm saying is that I remember when my kids were in preschool, I was like sick constantly. You know, I had a sore throat for 6 years probably because they were in preschool, bringing it home. But there is a good theory that's supported by the data or by evidence that because kids are infected with so many different cold viruses in those early years, that there's cross reactivity and that there's some part of their immune response, in other words, antibodies and T cells for other coronaviruses that help out with this virus. And so that could be part of it. And because seniors don't generally get colds very often because they're not around little kids as much. Well, if you're around your grandkids, you are. But it could be that might be part of it. So there's a lot of things at play here, but you're definitely onto something, which is that the one of the puzzling things about this virus is why it can be so lethal for some people, and that yet others, as many as, and we talked about this last month, I think, Bill, as much as 35 to 40% of people that are infected with the virus never even know it.
Yeah.
So it's so puzzling to see it kills so many people. I mean, the number of fatalities in July is off the charts, double the normal rate here in Arizona because of this virus. Those numbers were released earlier this week. And yet many people like my daughter, for example, she's 24. She lives in Brooklyn, got the virus. She lost her sense of smell and taste for a couple weeks, and she's fine. And yet, you know, somebody else could kill them.
One more item, and I've only got a little over a minute. The odds of catching COVID-19 on an airplane are much slimmer than you might think, according to research done by statisticians at MIT. I was surprised at these numbers. If you're on a plane and they've got the middle seat vacant policy, I think this number shows 1 in 7,500 chance of getting COVID.
Yeah, I'm actually not surprised. And the reason I'm not surprised is because everybody that gets on a jet is very vigilant. I mean, they're wearing masks now. That's required. They've stopped the drink service, so no one's taking their mask off to have a drink. And the number of passengers is lower than it used to be. That's all mitigation. And people are washing their hands more frequently before and after. I think it's just because people are really careful and they're following the mitigation measures.
I agree, Will Humble. Thank you very much, Will. Try to check in with you in a month or so. Thank you very much, Will.
Take care.
All right. Better news, certainly, with Will than we had with him a month ago. So let's see what it looks like in late September. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. Mark Napier, Sheriff, will be my guest for the Friday Focus interview tomorrow. On behalf of Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass, we keep him over there as a mitigation. Not as a mitigation factor for COVID. It has nothing to do with it. I am seated here all alone. Tom's in his own little room, and we continue on. Dave Ramsey is next with his very popular show on money. I hope you have a great afternoon. Stay safe.